Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Monday, August 16th, 2016. It's all so confusing. You know, today was like the annual company picnic thing, and they rent out this big like it's like a big field sort of thing, but it's used for all kinds of events like this. Like all kinds of companies have their company picnics there and stuff, and you know, so it's like this big area. They've got like games for the kids. They've got typical sort of free hot dog hamburger kind of food. They've got a few little events that go on, free t-shirts, crap like that. But you know, the thing is, this time around it's like, you know, 90 some degrees. Blazing like sun, you know. So like we get there, and it goes from like 11 a.m. to like 4 p.m. or something like that. But we get there, and you know, everybody, like, well, not everybody, but like they're massive clumps of people in the small little spaces in the shade underneath the trees, and like nobody in the places in between. You know, so like, you know, they've got a few little tents set up. They've got a few little, they've got a few trees, and like, it's like everybody is jam packed, like shoulder to shoulder into the shady areas. And still,
it was that hot, huh?
You're in Southern Florida, you know, it's all a matter of perspective, you know, it's like,
how hot was it?
In mid 90s.
Oh, well, it's pretty hot.
Yeah, so mid-90s and, like, no clouds. So it was all, like, sun.
Yeah, you were not on the beach. You know, it's like it's not like you probably had much of a breeze either, right?
No breeze. We get out of this and, like, you know, I'm completely dehydrated. I'm, like, you know, I'm just ready to, like, okay, I want to pass out now, you know, from just walking around in the sun for a while, you know? Anyway, it was fun, but, you know, anyway. That was my exciting day. Anyway, we're going to have a few topics today. We're going to talk a little bit about the Ground Zero Mosque, maybe a little bit about Google Verizon net neutrality stuff. And I wanted to mention a couple things about our friend Newt Gingrich that came up recently. And then if we have time, there are a few other smattering of things. So,
okay.
Let's start with the Ground Zero Mosque. This is something that has been percolating for a number of weeks now, and we just haven't gotten around to mentioning it really on this show. But this week, you know, it got a little bit more attention. The president mentioned it, things like that. But, you know, look, the bottom line here is what's happening is there is a Muslim community center, which will have a mosque on like its fourth floor or something, that's being renovated and sort of rebuilt a few blocks away from the Ground Zero site. This had been approved by all the local authorities. All the local New York people, for the most part, had no objections or any thoughts about this. And then at some point, it became, you know, a right-wing talking point crusade to talk about how this was sort of spitting in the face of the memory of 9/11 and all kinds of stuff like that. And
right.
I listened to this stuff. And, you know, for the most part, I mean, I've been very dismissive. I mean, I've been like, okay, there go the wackos again. You know,
so have I. I must admit, I have been of the same, which is why I hadn't brought the subject up. I mean, but I've read about it.
The thing is, it's like the percentage of people who like are, I don't know. It's like it's easy to dismiss as, you know, only crazy people would even be concerned about this. But then you realize there's a significant portion of the public who, when they hear these kinds of arguments, are swayed by them. I mean, and look,
yes.
Here's the thing. I mean, fundamentally, first of all, let aside, you know, any freedom of religion stuff. We'll talk about that in a second. But, I mean, the whole premise of this being a 9/11 thing just completely distorts the reality of what happened there. I mean, first of all, a significant number of those 3,000 people who died were Muslim. I mean, I don't know what percentage it was, but it was non-trivial. You know, second of all, okay, maybe the 20 hijackers were Muslim, but that doesn't The whole idea that you can extend what they did, what that small group of extremists did, and paint it as something that, you know, applies to all Muslims and any mosque, it just boggles my mind. And is like, am I on the same planet as these people? I mean, they're really, it really is to them, sort of a cultural, religious, Christian versus Muslim kind of thing, as opposed to anything else. And I don't know. It's just every time I hear this stuff come up, it just frustrates the hell out of me, you know, in terms of, I can't believe these people are even getting a hearing. I mean, it's like, really? I mean, you know, I think Timothy McVeigh might have been a Christian. I don't know. Does that mean we should, like, prohibit all churches in Oklahoma City? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's the same kind of logic.
The thing that is most affronting to me, me personally, about this whole thing is, you know, you read our why did, you know, people from England came over here in order to settle in the United States was for freedom of religion. Okay, it is one of the most important things and tenets that you read. Like, I remember going to the Jefferson Memorial, and it spoke about, you know, how important it was for people to freely be able to exercise their religion, and for everybody to be whipped up into a frenzy because, you know, to try to prohibit a group from setting up a place that was a community center. As far as it wasn't even I don't understand why they kept calling it a mosque. I kept reading.
It's a community center. There will be it's like the equivalent of a YMCA having a chapel in the corner somewhere.
Right. Exactly. And I'm like, you know, for them to be whipped up in a frenzy to try to stop it, it's just ridiculous. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, people seem to lately, you know, in so many instances, just, why doesn't anybody give a fuck about the Constitution anymore? Is it just irrelevant? Do people think some quaint old document that you just wipe your ass with?
Well, to be honest,
is that the problem?
To be honest, a lot of people do think exactly that. However, I want to actually stay away from. Yes, there is a constitutional question, and there is the, you know, freedom of religion as, you know, listed in the First Amendment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But you know, I take it more than that. Like, forget the Constitution. This is a notion of sort of fundamental respect of other human beings. You know,
I understand.
And it's like, and I don't know. And you know, let's take it a step further here. You know, I was reading a little bit about this, and I'll once again admit to not delving really deeply into this. But apparently, the imam who is associated with this project is one that has been an outspoken critic of some of the more radical elements here. And not only that, he had been recruited by not only this administration, but by the Bush administration previously to go speak to foreign audiences on behalf of America in terms of how, you know, America wasn't what they might think it might be in terms of how it related to our local Muslim population, et cetera. You know, this is not, you know, some hotbed of radicalism where the people were jumping up and down calling for the destruction of America. These are, you know, and the fact that there's no distinction made here, that it doesn't matter to the people who object to this kind of thing, whether the particular Muslims who go to this place or are associated with this project, whether they're, you know, flaming terrorist supporters who, you know, go out of their way to say that, you know, Osama bin Laden was right and everything that happened should have happened and that more should happen, or whether they're, you know, upstanding American citizens who happen to be Muslim, who are, you know, building a community center for themselves. And the fact, I don't know, I'm left speechless whenever I consider these kinds of things where, you know, these people, it's like, this really doesn't matter to you. It makes no difference to you. It's like a Muslim's a Muslim is a Muslim, and they're all evil. Really?
Yeah, pretty much. I believe that these people believe that. Yes, a lot of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, they say, you know, that it shows no respect. It show, you know, it's not a matter of the right to build there, but is it wise to build there? It's spitting in our face. We don't want them to. Really? Come on. I mean, it's hard, it, you know, and this speaks to a larger thing, you know, that, you know, this kind of reaction where I listen to the political discourse going on and my only reaction is to sort of shake my head and be like, I can't believe I'm listening to this as an actual conversation that's being taken seriously, is just happening more and more often. And I mean, I'll be honest, it's mm-hmm. not just the Republicans. I mean, you know, as has been pointed out here and elsewhere before, you know, Obama's been continuing a lot of the Bush policies in terms of, you know, the war of terror. He has changed the name and stuff, but a lot of the things that people complained about Bush doing, he hasn't changed. Sure, he's changed some things around the edges, but a lot of things he hasn't. And, you know, and I look at, and another example being the sort of reaction to sort of copyright law and the entertainment industry and all that kind of stuff. I listen to all those arguments, and it can be on the right, it can be on the left, it can be whatever. And I'm like, really? Am I really in such a different universe than these people? And the answer is yes. Yes, I am. Yeah, it's like the kind of the debate that's happening, like I listen to it and I'm like, I'm no longer even sharing in the underlying assumptions here, because there's the, you know, I listen to both sides of the conversation and it sounds to me like they're both saying things that make absolutely no sense to me, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, it is our new reality. I don't know. I don't know when the heck I was talking about this the other day. It's just, you know, it's exactly the point you just brought. It's just, I mean, there's discourse right now, you can't talk about anything without any common sense. Even it can't come into the equation. It's like me mentioning the other day, okay, you know, look, in order to balance a budget, okay, anywhere, you know, in your household, you have to consider both income and expenses. Well, how would it be if you're in your household and you're trying to balance your budget and, well, income cannot be touched. Not a consideration. You can only touch the expense side of the house. Okay. Kind of tough to balance your budget that way. Nobody would do this. But yet we go into a discourse right now
I'll go further than that and say the discourse is more like you're obviously talking about taxes on the income side. You know, we can't even consider raising taxes in any way, shape, or form. So we have to only look on the reduction of expenses side. But we'll only look at small, inconsequential things around the edges that don't really matter in comparison to the big items that we're not going to talk about.
Exactly, to the big items, right. We're not going to touch that 800-pound gorilla that's there, which is our entitlement program for Social Security, whatever. We're not going to touch that. All the pension, state pensions, funds, or whatever, let's not touch that. No. We'll just talk about everything on the edges that is pretty much inconsequential,
We'll worry about $1 million here or there to some congressman's pet project to research something in their district, you know? I have no doubt that some or a lot or most of that kind of stuff may be wasteful, but it really is, you know, nibbling around the edges. It's not really.
Yes, it is. It's not the big ticket items that can solve really the root of our problem. Okay. So anyway,
it's time for a break. We'll take a break. We'll be back. We'll talk about, Google, Verizon, net neutrality, that kind of stuff. We'll be right back after this exciting message.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, and we're back. So this had actually originally broken before our last show, but we didn't talk about it. There's been some more discussion since then, and so I just wanted to bring it up. Google has been getting a lot of flack this last week because over its history, it had been a big advocate of net neutrality and had made a lot of statements about how this was good, how it needed to happen, how we needed to protections to ensure that it happened, how even that it should in fact apply to wireless as well as wired networks, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then recently they put out a joint release with Verizon, basically listing a sort of statement of principles of how net neutrality should work, that in many cases seemed to a lot of people like a 180 on things they had previously said. And so they've been getting a lot of flack over that. So basically things like saying that it made sense to while wired networks should be held to a net neutrality standard, the regulatory power shouldn't be able to actually make rules, but only sort of arbitrate in disputes that arose, that wireless networks, for the most part, should be exempt, as would, quote-unquote, new services of some sort, that utilized new technologies on top of the network, and things along those lines. And basically, a lot of people have pointed out, hey, look, the future of the internet is wireless. There, from the point of view of technology right now, yes, wireless networks are much more limited in capacity right now. There's a lot of constraints on that capacity. It's not growing as quickly as demand is growing, so that's clearly an issue. However, that's likely to be somewhat of a transitional state. I mean, at some point, there will be, much, much higher capacity, much, much speedier wireless broadband that's available, ubiquitously almost. And so any rules that you put in place now at the point where it's got these constraints are going to survive and last into that next era and become the new normal rules for everything, essentially. And so that's part of the criticism there. I don't know your initial thoughts, Yvonne. I'll start by saying that this is an area that I've always been of very mixed feelings. On the one hand, I feel like, hey, they're private companies here. They have their own networks. Yes, many times they got like the infrastructure for their networks through government sweetheart deals. But at this point, they're their own networks that they own. And to some degree, they should be able to do whatever the hell they want to with them. And if they're doing something that the public doesn't like, then maybe the competition is needed there. On the other hand, on the flip side of that, I look at it and saying, a world where the reality was a net neutrality type of system. And basically, for anybody that doesn't know, that means it's not allowed to give preference to one type of traffic over another on the network. So you can't have sort of certain websites that pay the internet provider more money for a faster, more reliable connection. You can't have something that says that if I set up my own little personal website, I'm going to, unless I pay, be in sort of a lower tier of service. You can't do things like take certain types of traffic like peer-to-peer networks and automatically slow them down and things like that, and that the network has to be neutral. I think a neutral world would be the best world. I'm just not sure of the right way to get.
But it's not even like right now. Right now, it isn't even really, realistically, it isn't really a neutral world.
No.
Okay?
Not.
when you are a company, it's not in the internet. When you're a large, if you're a large company, for example, most of them pay for Akamai services to be able to have high speed access to their data websites around the world. Most people don't have that kind of access. If you don't have that, you wind up like the problems I've had with multiple firms that I've been working with, where they have offices, say, in Hong Kong or in some place in Asia, and they're trying to upload and download files from there to here. And guess what? They figure out that, oh my God, it is slow. And I'm like, yes, it is. And it's like, well, how could you get, you know, higher speed? Well, unless, you know, you purchase dedicated connections or you do this or you do that, you're pretty much going to be screwed. You are not going to have the speed that you believe, because you know, because your traffic is being parceled out to very slow connections. And so honestly, this whole dream that we have, like even like right now, that we have some net neutrality, isn't really there right now.
Well, yes,
it is to a certain extent domestically.
There are a couple things there. No, it's not. The reality is it is not fully there, and in the wireless world, it certainly isn't. Like there are all kinds of services that the wireless world shuts out right now. Like if you're on on the AT&T wireless network and blah blah blah, or any of the others, there are certain things that just plain won't work because they block them. And you're absolutely right that but what you're talking about, the kinds of speed things you're talking about, are really related to limits of the infrastructure itself, you know, and in some cases, you know, physical limits. I mean, fundamentally, it's further to go across the world.
But
you can pay someone like Akamai, who has local presence in a whole bunch of areas, to distribute your content and blah, blah, blah. However, though, that's still working within the system of that. From the level of the network management, treats everything the same, and you're just dealing with the network topology and the thickness of the pipes and things like that. But what this kind of policy is talking about are sort of network policies where, you know, what the carrier could give preference to its own traffic. It could get much worse.
And I understand. And I understand that. But I think that the reality is that given the current constraints, I don't honestly see, given the explosion of traffic, given how much stuff we're trying to do over the internet, look at how AT&T has had to cope with the explosion of data being downloaded wirelessly. It isn't an unlimited commodity. So it will eventually, I think that there is no realistic way of not allowing, you know, certain people to be able to pay for to be able to deliver their content at a faster speed than others, you know, are going to have to be relegated to slower lanes. It just, I don't see how the heck. I mean, it's just we don't have unlimited capacity, and we never will. And what's happening right now with the capacity as it's added, it's just being soaked up by a lot more stuff. iPads, this, that, whatever. More ideas. People are getting more creative on how to use this stuff.
Well, I'll tell you what.
So I don't know.
I think there are a couple things here. I think if certain... I think there is going to be a competitive it's interesting. I won't jump in and say it. I was going to say there's going to be a potential competitive disadvantage of being too cute in terms of how you shape your network traffic. You know, like, but, you know, it's hard to see how that'll actually play out because, you know, there is an audience for that. Like, there's certainly an audience that, like, I remember way back, you know, they probably still do it. I just never paid attention. You know, if you get your internet service from Comcast, this is like a default homepage you get. And there's like a Comcast portal that has news and crap and entertainment and co-branded stuff. You know, and companies like that could easily make that stuff work a lot better than going out directly to the sources of some of that content, or let alone content that they're not providing. And, you know, I look at that and I'm like, the notion of that kind of pisses me off. But your average Joe Blow who gets there is just like, oh, yeah, that's where I go to my Comcast homepage and I look at my videos there, you know, and they don't give a shit. You know, and
no, they don't.
And does that mean that, you know, you'll have sort of a fragmented system where what the internet looks like to your average person on Comcast versus AT&T versus Verizon is a different looking internet? Maybe. And you pay different tiers. Like, I mean, there's a graphic that's been going around for years, it seems, on this issue that sort of says, you know, it's like, an internet ad that's worked up in the same way that cable channel packages are now, whereas, you know, you pay one price.
Listen, the World Cup was an example of that right now. If you went to ESPN, set up this website right now, they have ESPN3.com. Okay, which, you know, they have ESPN and ESPN2 on TV, so their web version is ESPN3. You could only get access to ESPN3 if you were a subscriber of one of the content providers that pays for ESPN content. If not, you couldn't watch the games. Right. That's it. So, you know, that to me seemed like, when I saw that, I'm like, damn it, we're moving towards that.
Yeah, I mean, so, and like, you know, here's your internet package that includes, you know, news sites. Here's your internet package for sports sites. Here's your internet package for video. Yeah. And each of them pays something different. And then here's this other price, you know, if you want to access, like, you know, all the ghetto sites that aren't part of the other packages, you know. And I don't know. It's a very, to me anyway, it's a depressing view at a potential future. And, you know, my hope is that, like, just the nature of demand for, you know, that people will have will push towards the open model rather than the closed silos. However, you know, we've raved on this show about, you know, iPhones and iPads and stuff, and they're a perfect example of that closed silo model, and it's working pretty damn well over there. So why couldn't that same model apply, you know, to other types of internet content, not just apps and things like that on a
device? I agree. I totally agree. I mean, it, you know, it's like, why wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, one of the reasons why people have sort of said, you know, that won't work is because, of course, the internet itself, as we know it today, is sort of the model that succeeded when the closed walled gardens like AOL failed, you know, in, you know, 20 years ago. But, you know, it's a different time, you know?
It's a different time because there weren't the different content providers, okay? That's the difference. I think that the one thing is that AOL had to be the content provider for almost virtually everything that was on the site, which becomes impractical. That now, if you are if you think more of the model of like cable television or satellite television, where yes, you are the carrier, but yet you enter into agreements with all these different content providers to put everything up, it's a different story, okay? I think that that's I think the key difference that may allow people to be able to drive towards that model right now. So
I don't know. I'm living up to the title of this podcast. I feel very curmudgeonly on this. I'm like, you know, give me back my 1990s internet, damn it, you know.
Well, I'll get you, you know, I was just looking, like, right now, you know, so you can get your next technology. You should get one of these Neores 550 toilets. This will help you get your curmudgeonly thoughts done.
Have you
heard about these? It says here it has a programmable night light. It apparently, as you approach it, it will actually open itself and heat the seat.
Yes.
Interesting.
You know, I over the years, I've read and seen articles about a variety of, you know, sort of high-end feature toilets, mostly from Japan, I must say. They seem to have a...
Yes, this is from Japan.
You know.
This is from Japan, yes.
You know, and I must say, I've never had a really strong desire to try one of these things. I'm just like...
I don't know.
You know...
$2,500, okay, for one of these, okay, for a toilet. $2,853.
It, you know, I understand different people have different priorities on what they want to spend money on. I'll spend money on, like, electronic gadgets for, well, I guess this is an electronic gadget, but it's a different
kind. Yeah, yes, it is.
You know,
yes, it is.
To myself, okay, you know, I am civil. I am of the point in my development that I'm like, okay, I will spend some money to do something more than a hole in the ground latrine. Okay, that's cool. I don't want to do that. You know, those suck. You know,
yes.
I've occasionally had to deal with those when like camping or something. And yet, no, that's not what I want in my house. But you know. Above and beyond sort of your standard American toilet that works reliably and flushes, I'm cool. You know?
All right.
I don't need the fancy features. You're
good. You don't need the fancy features. Okay.
I don't need the
simple man.
I don't need it to wipe my butt for me. I don't need it to like have
I know.
Yeah, I don't need
it. Even
that.
Like shoots you like a blows you hot air afterwards to dry your butt and everything.
Yeah, see, you know, I'll go a little further. I'll say I not only don't feel a strong need for those, I'm somewhat scared of those features. Okay, let's take a break.
Okay, on that note, we can take a break.
We'll be back in a second, and we'll talk about Newt Gingrich. We'll be right back.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by No-Tell Motel.
Lament for the Thing by Jameson Crabtree. Our mistake was in the trusting. Who knows if your hound licks your face for threat or taste? Thing, my dog, has chewed bald the tip of his tail. Here, let's start somewhere cold and end somewhere else, someplace colder. Blow off the noumion and reckon on what location translates to. Not much. We need to go. We haven't. The landscapes treat us with suspicion. Wild animals watch us slantwise. Dear thing, I am thinking of going to the Antarctic too. Or New York. Love has driven me bruised and blue. I am inconsolable and dislocated. I spin, spin, spin as a result of some combination of whiskey and chagrin. Thing, I'm saying I want to defibrillate the landscape and then fall in, for the ground to buck or shake and swallow me whole, except for my hand unfolding from the snow like a daffodil. This is how we say goodbye, and this is why you came here. To disappear.
For more like this, go to notellmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
Okay, we're back. Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich has been in the news lately a little bit. As many of our listeners may remember or may not, it's been a while. He was the Speaker of the House back during the Clinton administration, or part of the Clinton administration. He was there through part of the impeachment stuff, left in the middle of that, I believe, if I remember correctly. But he came in along with a wave of Republicans in 1994, was it? Am I remembering right?
94? It was in 94. That's great. You know, it's in 94 when he became Speaker of the House, yes.
Yes, and it was, you know, they had this whole, what was it, the Promise to America or something? I forget the name. Contract with America, that's what it was. Basically said if Republicans took the House, they'd do all this stuff, and, you know, they got flack for not doing some of it, but actually, if you read it carefully, it was that they would bring all these things up for debate, not that they would necessarily succeed on all of them. So they actually pretty much did all the points in their contract and did what they promised, including shutting down the government at one point, which, you know, when there was no budget that they liked. And they got a bunch of flack for that. Anyway, he left town, you know, and then the last couple years, in the last election cycle, there was some talk of him running for president. He did not in the end. But that kind of talk has been happening a lot again over the last few months. And he's been driving some of it himself, basically, you know, stirring the rumor mill that he might want to run for president. And then the latest was one of his ex-wives. This last week, an interview with her was published in some magazine. Was it Esquire or something? I forget, Yvonne, do you know?
Yes, on Esquire. It's an Esquire, yes.
Esquire. And anyway, so basically, you know, it looks like this woman's doing everything she can to torpedo his chances of ever being president.
Here's the highlights. Okay, let's see. He met his first wife, Jackie, when she was his high school geometry teacher. They married when he was 19 and she was 26. Yep. Okay. He later dumped Jackie while she was recovering from cancer to marry then mistress Marianne. He later dumped Marianne for mistress and eventual third wife, Callista, while she suffered from multiple sclerosis. Apparently, Newt has huge issues with a marital vow in sickness and in health. While married to Marianne, Newt wanted her to tolerate his affair with Callista, who is 23 years his junior. In answering an incredulous Marianne who questioned his hypocritical public family values grandstanding while cheating on her with her much younger aide Callista, Gingrich arrogantly replied, "It doesn't matter what I do. People need to hear what I have to say. There's no one else who can say what I say. It doesn't matter what I live."
And I think that last bit right there, I mean, as much as the rest sort of shows the guy is kind of scummy, that last bit, I think, is the part that resonates the most in terms of, you know, this kind of presidential thing. Because, you know, basically you're saying, yes, I'm a hypocrite and proud of it. I mean, because it's completely...
Yep.
There are a couple different things here. Like, you fully expect, like, I can pontificate all I want about, like, the right way to live and recognizing that sometimes I myself won't live up to those myself, but I'll try, and I'll recognize that in places where I haven't lived up to my own ideals, I haven't lived up to my own ideals, and I've done something wrong, and I'll sort of recognize the error and apologize if appropriate and blah blah blah. But that's very different from saying I'm going to tell everybody else that this is the way they behave, and I have no intention to even try to behave that way myself, because they need to hear it, but I'm somehow above it all.
Right.
And
pretty good, huh?
I guess it's a good deal. I mean, it doesn't sound any of his wives really went for that, and were like, yeah, you're right. You're right, Newt. You know, go do that. Yeah, but here's the thing. I have always, to some degree, liked Newt Gingrich. I know you don't, but like, I actually liked a number of things.
No. I liked a number of things that he's done and stuff. I mean,
the main thing I liked about him was even when I disagreed with him, it seemed like at least in public policy areas, there were a couple things that I liked. One, you pretty much knew where he stood. He wasn't saying, well, aside from this kind of stuff, I guess, he wasn't saying one thing and then privately making a deal on something completely differently. At least it didn't seem that way.
That's true.
Maybe that's not the case, given what we're hearing here, or maybe that only applies to private stuff. I don't know, but it does make me trust him less on that. And second, he seemed like someone who actually did think about what was going on. He knew a lot about history and applied it. After he was in government, he did a series of history lectures through some university, and some of these were televised, and I listened to a few of them. And he's a good history professor. And that sort of, here's someone who is somewhat intellectual, is somewhat intelligent, knows what the hell he's talking about. That was appealing to me. However, it does seem clear, based on everything we now know of his history, that on top of all of that, he is he is very self-serving. He will push one agenda, whether or not he believes it, if he thinks it'll get him ahead. And he certainly does not seem to be trustworthy. I mean, I mean, and maybe it's different in professional life. You can argue that, but I mean, to me, it seems like being trustworthy or not is something that is a general quality that applies, that if you are, it applies in all aspects of your life, or at least it should. And, you know, basically, look, I have no problem necessarily with people having issues in their marriages and moving on, and you know, either having, you know, open relationships or divorcing and moving on or whatever. But what he seems to have in the case of each of his ex-wives treated them particularly shabbily. You know, he like doesn't choose to dump them until they're sick. And, you know, he in both cases proposed to his new wife before suggesting divorce with the old wife. At least I think that maybe it's before the divorces were final. I don't know. If that's the case, I don't care. But like it just seems like, I don't know, it seems pretty scummy overall. And you know, I think he'd be a good Republican candidate in general if he was just someone who was, you know, sticking by the views he's advocated in the past. But it seems like he's got enough of these skeletons in the closet that it would just kill him. Although you never, it's funny with these Republican primaries, like, cause they're all about family values and stuff. But then when you actually get a case of someone that has major issues on that front, half the time they're just forgiven and move on.
Yeah, so that's the one thing. It may be that. I mean, I don't know. It's a lot of people may see him and, you know, just not care that he's hypocritical about those issues. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, we'll see how people do it. I don't know. It depends how hard she keeps hitting at this, because, I mean, she's really going for the jugular. I mean, for this guy. I mean, I got to tell you that, look, I was looking at right now the over here, we've got some the primaries over here in Florida right now have been particularly nasty. Okay. You talk about, you know, you see this nastiness over here with Republicans. We've got two guys running for governor, Bill McCollum and Rick Scott. The TV ads are just, man, these guys are just after each. I mean, I have never seen a campaign so, I mean, so spiteful between the two candidates, man. I mean, it is just unreal. I think that it's a portent to it's going to be one hell of a nasty election season. I tell you what, I think this is going to be one of the nastiest ever. Okay, the way the campaigns are going to go down. That's my feeling right now with what with the preview I'm seeing with the primaries. Okay.
You know, the primaries here in Washington State, I haven't been paying a huge amount of attention to, but the ads I have seen, my only reaction to them has been basically like, what? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. You know that sheep ad that your favorite person had?
Of course.
You know, there have been a couple along those lines. The one I remember, and these ads have completely failed on me because I don't remember the names of any of the candidates involved or even what parties they are. But, you know, there's one that has, like, people running across. It's like they're accusing the incumbent of wearing her tennis shoes while she steps on people's backs.
Huh?
Exactly. That's the message I get out of
what?
It.
What?
And my only attempt at interpreting this.
So it would be better if she's wearing high heels?
I don't know. So my only attempt at interpreting this is that the incumbent candidate must have at some previous time that just is not in my consciousness made some campaign theme about how, like, they're, you know, a regular person or whatever, jogging in tennis shoes or whatever. And then they're trying to combine that with, you know, her advocating tax increases and stuff and stepping on the people's backs. But it's combined in a way that, you know, and it has visuals of, like, people lying down in a field with somebody stepping on them. And I'm like, what the hell is that about? You know, it's like, anyway, so.
Well, the ad I saw today, what are the ads?
I believe our primary ballots are due tomorrow, actually, so I should probably look at this. I'll be honest, like, you know, I in the past I've posted when I've been, like, thinking about local elections on my blog. The last local election, I missed. I had the ballot, I didn't do anything with it, and it was just, like, some local referendum or something. I have no idea what it was about. I didn't spend time on it. Other things were going on. Skipped my mind. This time there are primaries. I probably actually care about some of these races or should care about some of these races. I may not vote because I feel like I know nothing. I am not the kind of person who will vote party line regardless. So I'm not going to vote without knowing about, you know, the issues and the people involved. And I may not have time before in the next 24 hours to do this. So I may just not vote in the primary.
I will tell you, well, me for the primary, I wasn't planning on voting because for the key posts that I am interested in the election for governor, the Democratic candidate that's running is got the nomination unopposed. Okay. So that's no biggie. So I was like, and that's the candidate I was planning to vote on. So I'd really, honestly, the two Republicans that are right now basically machine gunning each other on TV, I really had not much interest in that election. On the Senate seat that's open, I'm actually planning to vote for the independent. So
Crist?
I honestly, yeah, I'll probably vote for Crist. I actually don't like any of the Democrat or Republican candidates right now that are in that group. So I'll probably vote for Charlie Crist.
Very interesting. And all of this, like, yeah, honestly, it's hard to get really worked up about the midterm elections, at least for me. I mean, maybe the Republicans will take back over the House or something, you know, and you know, I've said before, I actually think mixed government where you have one party in the presidency and another in the Congress, at least one branch of the Congress, maybe both, is actually preferable in many cases. So we'll see. I think we've gotten better results in the past when we have that kind of mixed situation. But what it also brings up is, we're only a few months away, and this Newt Gingrich thing is just another example of it. We're only a few months away from the start of the 2012 presidential season, because you know that's going to kick off the day after the November elections. So,
yeah. No, man.
Off to the races we go. And it's not going to be as much fun as last time, because it doesn't look like Obama's going to have a primary challenge. At least it doesn't look like that so far. So it's only going to be on one side, which is really interesting. And then we'll see where we are when we get to the general election. I think, you know, it'll all depend on how the economy is done between now and then, to be honest, more than
that's pretty much. If the economy, my feeling, and I've said this before, because historically it's been the same way. If the economy picks up by the end of the next year, and it does a pretty good pickup, it's awfully hard for the incumbent to get unseated whenever the economy picks up. I mean, that's just reality.
But if things go to shit, look at the see you later, election. Obama.
Exactly. That's pretty much it. I mean, if you look at the 2004 election, there was a lot of, angst about Bush and a lot of people complaining about it, et cetera, and so forth. But yet, the economy had picked up, and you know what? He won.
Yep.
And, you know, despite all of that. So, you know, if the economy picks up, I say it's probably going to be the same result. Pretty difficult to unseat the incumbent president if the economy picks up.
Yeah,
so.
And if it doesn't, Obama's in trouble. Anyway, we'll see.
Oh, yeah. If it doesn't, he's totally in trouble. Okay? There's no way.
Yeah.
There's no way to win.
Okay, there were a couple other minor things on my list, but nothing exciting. So unless you have anything else, Yvonne, I suggest we just wrap it up.
You can wrap it up now.
Okay, so thanks everybody for listening to our show this week. Tell your friends. Curmudgeon's Corner is wonderful, entertaining, etc. They should listen all the time. If you have any questions, comments, thoughts, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com, and we will be glad to respond to them on the show in a future week. In the meantime, have a good week, everyone, and listen again next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
See you, Yvonne.
Another successful show. Here we go. Bye-bye.
Indeed. Bye.